There was a time when if you wanted to promote a product, you simply tagged it new and improved to attract attention. Not anymore. Today, it's all too apparent that if you want to work people up into a shopping frenzy, all you got to do is swear that whatever you're selling is anti-aging and make way for the stampede. Eye creams, night serums, vitamins, supplements, skin treatments, diets, probiotics, hair oils, herbal teas, beef tallow, workouts, meditation, even smart water. I'm just waiting for air directors to slap the label on mattresses, SUVs, and the newest iteration of Pepperidge Farm cookies. Evidently, America is stricken with, among other things, a collective case of Peter Pan syndrome. To look at the shelves of your CVS pharmacy, you can't help but think that nobody wants to grow up. But come on, ladies and gents, you know damn well that no one has figured out how to roll back the second hand, whether it's a Rolex or a kitchen clock. What you can do, however, is slow down the process. With the right diet, supplements, exercise, treatment, self-care, and yes, potions and lotions, you can start pro-aging, as Chip Conley suggested a few weeks back on our podcast, which might not have the same spin to it, but the results can be far more satisfying. So to help us stop the anti-aging madness and start directing our efforts towards looking and feeling the best versions of ourselves, I'm real happy to have as our guest today Dr. Jake Deutsch, founding doctor of Oakwood Precision Medicine, a concierge service whose laser focus is on pro-aging, empowering us to embrace the benefits of healthy longevity rather than wasting our time and money on clock stopping, with cutting-edge medical care founded on prevention and optimization. Welcome, doctor, to the Happy Grown-Up.
Thanks, Hal. Thank you. You made it seem so clinical. We're friends.
I know. I just wanted to give you your gravitas.
And like my mother-in-law is obsessed with you. So we have a lot in common, but I'm glad to be here. I think what you're doing is fantastic. And I think there's a lot that relates to what you're talking about and what I put into practice. So I'm really happy to jump into
it. Look, I know you as a friend, of course, but today I don't want to talk to you as a buddy. I want to talk to you as an authority because you are one.
Okay.
You know?
Thank you.
Welcome.
Yeah.
Okay. So my first problem is that unless you're too young to drink legally, I've never known anyone who wants to look their age. Look, I remember way back before I was even bar mitzvahed, Pepsi Cola's tagline was for those who think young. But it just seems like today, the desire to beat the clock is just, it's become an obsession. Why is the fixation so strong and why is it so delusional?
Well, I mean, there's a couple parts to that to unwrap. But, you know, anti-aging, I think, is probably the wrong term because we can't not age. So, you know, we want to do it in the best way possible. And, you know, there's nothing negative about aging. That's, I think, something that we have to separate. So whether it's pro-aging or longevity or health optimization, I think that that's really the concept that we have to really be thinking about so that people aren't intimidated by this, because we're not expecting people not to grow older. And in fact, when I work with people, my idea for them is I want you to feel the best that you can at your age. As we go into your birthday, that's the time when you should say, you know what, I feel great turning 50. I am on top of my game, rather than, oh, I have a big birthday coming up and now I'm going to start doing something. And the bigger shift is also that we've started to look at how we can prevent. And, you know, medicine for many, many years, when I learned it in med school, was really reactive. And now we're starting to think about being proactive and how we can not get the problem and what we could do to sort of reverse those processes. And that's what's changing a lot. That's why everybody's obsessed with this. But sometimes it gets lost in translation. You know, people are just thinking, oh, well, you just don't want to grow old. And that's not the concept. We want to really have an advantage. We want to be thinking preventatively, and we want to, you know, sort of challenge the norms that have become so much part of the failure of the healthcare system.
The many people who first come to your practice come with unrealistic expectations? And if so, how do you get them to come around to something logical and doable? Yeah.
For me, most of the people are really kind of in the mindset of they want to take control and they want to be proactive. So I don't get a lot of that, as opposed to traditional medicine where, you know, somebody's like, I hate going to doctors and I don't want to work on anything. So I'm in a little bit of a different situation, but still within that construct of people who are really being proactive. There's some unrealistic expectations, you know, but that's really where the art of helping guide them and giving the best possible information and using it, data. You know, what we're doing now, which is so different, is that we're really looking at things with real data, looking at biomarkers, blood tests frequently, doing things like body composition analysis that's going to give us more than what the scale can tell us. Having a real sense of what works and what doesn't, wearable devices that are tracking information, that's where getting realistic expectations comes in and is much more powerful than what we've traditionally
done. But yeah, I want to get to what you do at Oakwood, but before that, but when you look at the culture, when you look at advertising, has the culture sort of put out there an unrealistic expectation that not really noticing what we're not really relating to what we're up against?
I mean, I think to some sense, yes, when you look at, you know, like the standard of beauty and, you know, sort of expectations that everybody should have a certain percentage of body fat. But again, when you have good guidance and information that's productive and using data, then that can very easily be redirected and, you know, be something that's positive. So I think that it really depends on who's your authority and, you know, who's giving you the information versus just discounting it across the board.
Well, like the example, those claims that you hear from beauty products for men and women, they make about skincare reversal, eliminating lines and wrinkles, have any validity at all? Or is it just dream weaving?
Yeah, I mean, of course, there's a lot of hope and aspiration that goes into that type of marketing. But when we can look at something substantive and say, you know, I can see a reduction of inflammation because you're working on your sleep, or I can see your cortisol numbers going down because we're now getting you to work out more. Like, that's a difference versus, oh, this cream is going to make you look better. You know, so yes, there's certain science to the development of those type of products. And, you know, the ones that I choose when it comes to beauty are going to be things that are more based in science. But, you know, I think that there's always going to be marketing that's going to be trying to attract, you know, the quick fix. Your job as a consumer and us as being people that are aging well is to weed out the BS and, you know, get some guidance that's really going to, I think, be productive. So that's what I hope that I'm providing.
I mean, you began your career, or rather your residency, in the ER. And anyone who's ever watched even one episode of Grey's Anatomy, Chicago Med, ER, or the new streaming show, The Pit, knows that you dealt with honest-to-God trauma on a minute-by-minute basis.
Right.
So what's your response when some potential client comes to you literally traumatized by the thought of turning 60? How do you bring that person down off a ledge? What specifically, you've mentioned biofeedback and biomarkers, what specifically do you sort of retrain them to be noticing, and how do you go about exactly doing that?
Yeah. So my training as an ER doctor was really what I was passionate about and, you know, still enjoy. And the life and death situations are, you know, kind of what inspired me in terms of my career choice. At the same time, you know, it's a very tough job. And it really sort of makes you see kind of the worst of healthcare and, you know, kind of what happens to us if we don't take care of ourselves. And so when I was looking for change, I had built some businesses and wanted to, you know, kind of do something different to provide patient care. I went from the ER, which was sort of the end stage, everybody's worst day when things are hitting the fan, you know, having crisis because of your diabetes or, you know, respiratory failure, to more about what I was doing for myself, what I was providing for my friends and family, is care that was more directed towards prevention. And so when I have clients coming in and, you know, they might be in crisis because they're turning 60, I always am focused on the idea that, you know, we could really change our trajectory. We can change the way that we live now by making choices that are different and, you know, working on these different parts of our health. And, you know, I think that that is what gives people that hope and optimism. And so, you know, it doesn't matter if you're 20 or you're 60, starting to think about our health differently and proactively is a major shift. And so I saw that shift in my own career, and I'm seeing that shifting in patients sort of perception of what to expect as well. So it's an exciting time in medicine.
People talk about essential oils. People talk about going to get acupuncture, which is all Eastern. But the philosophy you have is actually much more Eastern than Western, in the sense that most Western medicine is aimed at curing ills once they arise. Yeah. And you just mentioned the idea of prevention. So how is it manifested in exactly in what you do? Is it because you're not necessarily doing acupuncture or using essential oils? Right. So you mentioned these processes. What is it that you use as this data for these markers?
Yeah. So, I mean, go back to your comment about Asian medicine. Traditionally Chinese medicine, you would pay your doctor as long as you were healthy. And the moment you got sick, then you stop making those payments. So it's a very similar kind of idea, but focus on not just those alternative forms of healing like acupuncture, but the science of medicine. So applying this concept of how can we prevent, how can we be, thinking about things proactively, and then really basing it in science. So great example, somebody is pre-diabetic. We can now basically reverse pre-diabetes and risk of developing diabetes by a number of modalities that we're looking at, whether it is the traditional diet or exercise, whether it's using devices like a continuous glucose monitor, or even including starting patients on medications like GLP-1 medications, the Ozempics and Mounjaros of the world. And that's really a big shift. So that's in a nutshell what we do. But I'm thinking about my process as being a health coach. I really am an advocate for living well and being that little voice that is being a continuous conversation. We see our clients every month, every 6 weeks. I like to help people wrap their head around the idea. You have a wealth management advisor, you have a real estate advisor, perhaps, you're talking to them all the time. You're not just seeing them once a year and, being told everything is fine. If your investment manager is saying that everything is fine, come see me in a year, you're probably not going to feel that you're as connected and getting the best results out of that. And so from a health perspective, that's really what I'm trying to provide. So yeah, it's a lot to unpack. And so for people who've never really done this, it may not make sense, but what we're seeing is people are hungry for it. They're listening to podcasts. They're talking about it with their friends and colleagues. Younger people are starting to be tuned into this. They kind of want to know where they are within their 20s. So when they get to their 60s, it's not a surprise. And that's really fascinating to me.
Well, going to that, is it ever too late to start doing this?
Absolutely not. It's like anything else to take care of yourself. The minute you stop smoking, your lungs heal themselves. So, to say, oh, I'm 60, I can't start, thinking about how I can optimize is nonsense, because you might be around for another three decades. And that's plenty of time to, feel your best and, kind of get the best out of that. We really look at two different things. What is your lifespan? Like, how long do you live? And then, what is your quality of life during that time? And those two things can be very different. You might live to be 100, but you might not be feeling good past 70. And so we want to kind of get the best of both of those as part of the process.
So instead of when somebody goes in for their quote annual checkup, then they do your blood pressure or nobody does your blood pressure unless you either go into the hospital, you go for your annual checkup, or for some reason you don't feel well. So you're basically saying we're going to take this once a month. We're going to do your blood work once a month. We're going to check your cortisone levels. And you can tell me what else goes into that. So it's a constant monitoring.
Yeah. And what's really fun about what we do, in my nerdy opinion, is we have a lot of technology that integrates with, for instance, an app. So you could be running your blood pressure at home, and then that sends a digital report to me, and I can see that. And I have a dashboard for everybody's health. And the app allows people to have that same dashboard. So we can really share information in a different way. And so, yeah, sometimes people that are in their 60s see me and think, oh, this technology is overwhelming. But, others, just thrive on it. And that data is what, really drives the conversation in a different way. And it's little reminders. If you see your doctor once a year, you're not going to be really pushed to go start, some resistance training in the gym, right? But if I'm seeing you frequently and we're checking in every week like we do with our clients, you're going to have a different perspective on about how valuable having healthy muscle mass is and helping you live longer. We know that there's an association there. And so I'm trying to be that little voice that's positive signals with long-term results that add up. Because it doesn't work seeing your doctor once a year.
No, it certainly doesn't. I agree with you. It certainly doesn't. But so, and let's say if there are imbalances, what are they treat it? Is it treated with vitamins, supplements? And like, how do you restore that balance in a person's body?
Full range. I mean, simple cases might just be using some supplements or, you know, basic things like vitamin D and multivitamins and probiotics and, you know, things that we think are very helpful, to using peptides, which are, you know, an alternative way to approach enhancing your body's function and, you know, sort of production of positive benefit, to hormone replacement for, you know, people who are deficient in hormone and, you know, really looking to optimize there. But that's, you know, sort of the, like, what I can, you know, prescribe, if you will. But we also, you know, we're looking on cholesterol optimization and metabolic health and reducing, you know, risk for diabetes, in addition to really focusing on body composition. The scale is one piece of information, but it doesn't tell us our body composition. And what we do in our office is the equivalent of a DEXA scan. If you've ever had a bone density test, that is a DEXA scan. And so from that, we can actually tell lean muscle mass, not just fat mass, but lean muscle mass. And now we can take a look at the body as a whole and understand a different level of health from getting that information. So we scan people with a non-radiation device in our office every visit. And that's really changing the conversation. Because I could see somebody who's come in and they've lost 5 pounds, but it might be 5 pounds of muscle, right? We want to see people maintain lean muscle mass. As we age, that is probably one of the most important things that we can impute, is that we have more muscle mass, because that is really what our body uses to survive. So having the body composition to understand that and put that into the big picture is really the secret sauce that we're working with our clients.
Now, you're based in New York, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. Now, my guess is you're not the only people doing this. So there are other places around the country where they seek this out. What are they looking for?
So you're looking for a doctor who's, you know, maybe functional medicine is how they describe themselves, or, you know, holistic medicine. You know, typically it falls in the category of primary care. But, you know, what I find is a lot of doctors are not able to provide this type of care because the third-party insurance models don't provide reimbursement for this. So, you know, for the most part, it's going to be somebody who may not take insurance. And that's really where there's a discrepancy between, you know, people being able to have access to this type of approach to medical care. And so my personal goal is to be able to scale this, to work on a process to be able to provide this level of care to everybody. That should be the standard that we're working towards. But if you at this moment are looking for somebody like myself, you're probably going to be looking for somebody who, you know, doesn't take insurance, because spending an hour with a limited number of clients just doesn't work when you're getting $40 from Medicare.
Okay. So for those people who can't afford necessarily to do this, but still care about the health, let's help them on a day-to-day basis. Let's talk first about diet.
Sure.
Like, one, how essential is this? Though I know the answer to that one, but also, well, and what are the keys to that good diet?
Yeah. So think about, you know, we're really concerned about medication, and the one medicine that we take every day, presumably 3 times a day, is what we choose to eat. So, you know, when you put it into that perspective, there's probably nothing more important than that. I think of the 3 pillars of health are going to be diet, exercise, and sleep.
Yeah, well, they're on my list, so we'll go through them. Yeah.
So diet's up there. And, you know, we are struggling in a society that has, you know, terrible food, you know, lots of processed and, you know, basically poisoning ourselves, very little education about diet, and certainly, you know, not very good, affordable, healthy options. So if you can't afford a practitioner to help you, you know, educating yourself on diet and working on diet is probably the easiest fix that most people can start with. And, you know, that's not as easier said than done. But, you know, sort of doing things that can be, I think, powerful are food logging, because most people have no idea what they eat. Using apps like That Count help you understand macros, the calories that we look at, can be a very interesting exercise. And then certainly using some of these basic devices, like I mentioned, the continuous glucose monitor, to understand how your body is metabolizing certain foods. So, you know, some doctors maybe not be doing what I'm doing, but you could say, hey, can I get a continuous glucose monitor? I don't want to develop diabetes or prediabetes. I want to understand what my food choices are doing, and being proactive about that. And I think bottom line is most physicians are not going to be spending the amount of time that you need. So you have to be proactive. So it's a little bit about finding a great practitioner and then learning about all of this stuff and sort of digging into what you can figure out on your own. And there maybe push your practitioner as well.
Well, there are all these, you know, there's all kinds of diets, you know, paleo diet, and just, you know, we're going to cut out all carbs, or we're going to go to a plant-based diet.
Right.
Is any diet of that kind of level too severe because it's not maintainable?
So I'm not a real fan of anything that's not including enough protein. So veganism and vegetarianism, you know, tend to be very difficult for people to maintain protein. And guess what? Going to go back to the same conversation about having enough muscle mass. So I'm not a big fan of that. My personal approach is a balanced approach. And that's with everything. You know, I don't expect people to work out 7 days a week. I also don't expect somebody to have, you know, zero fats in their diet. But, you know, when it comes to diet and, you know, choices there, focusing on balanced approaches is going to be much more effective. And then, you know, really quantities, because I think that we've lost the plot when it comes to like how much we should actually be eating. And so, you know, people are just overfed and unaware of what normal portion sizes should be. And so that's really where I think that can be very much simplified. And especially with all of the tools that we have, you know, we have so much information that we can pull up ourselves. You don't need to be a nutrition expert to be able to start to just get some of that information and apply it to your own activities and what you choose to eat.
Well, you said one thing, the thing about portion. It's always funny when people go vacation around Mediterranean countries, and they're always amazing how there are less people who are overweight or obese than we see in the United States. But one of the reasons, and you go, how's that possible? Because they're eating pasta. If you look at the portion of pasta that you're getting in a restaurant in Naples, and you look at the portion of pasta that you're going to get eating at Carmine's or Applebee's or Olive Garden, it's staggering, yes. The difference.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and also, you know, like the processed foods, like we talked about, and, you know, sort of the other parts of it that are really different in different countries. And then alcohol, you know, I think that that's probably one of the most under discussed issues. And, you know, the amount of calories that we consume from alcohol, the amount of damage that it does to our body, inflammation, you know, just really when we're talking about what we could do to reverse some of the damage of our choices, you know, sort of factoring that in as well is really important.
Is it just the sugar that's in alcohol, or is there other stuff in it as well?
I mean, I think it's the sugars for sure. It's the empty calories. But the alcohol itself causes, you know, injury to our body. You know, our liver is actually damaged. We see numbers of our liver enzyme go up in response to that damage that we're seeing from trying to process those you know, particular chemicals.
You know, the other night we were out in a good Italian restaurant, and here there wasn't a fast food place, and yet if you look at a box of DiCecco pasta, it says it serves 6 people. Okay, maybe that's extending a little bit. Nevertheless, Dave and I both ordered vongole, you know, spaghetti vongole. Our two portions combined, I had a catering business for 10 years. I can weigh food just by looking at it. It was a pound of pasta between the two of us.
Right.
And it was not, and I think the problem is too many of us were brought up in the, you know, for the clean plate club if you think about it, when you go into a restaurant, a person you've never met that you knows nothing about you is determining how much food you're going to be served. And of course, considering what it costs out to go out to eat these days,
right.
I understand the attitude. Right, for $37 for a bowl of pasta, I'm going to eat the whole goddamn thing. But the point is, you should be eating till you're satisfied, as opposed to when you're full.
And you know, you're paying for hopefully good quality food. And I would much rather see a lot more of the vongole than the pasta if I was going to balance that out. So yeah, I mean, diet is such a huge part of, you know, many people's health failings. So, you know, trying to work on that and trying to change that conversation. I mean, it's not easy to get somebody who's 60 to understand like how you should be directing your diet. And it becomes very repetitious. And, you know, your body gets used to that. So that's a big challenge for sure.
So like, let's go to exercise. Like both of us work out regularly, but the amount of times I've been in a gym and I'm watching somebody at 55, 65, whatever, work out the same way they did when they were 35.
Right.
And it's not my, I'm not a trainer. It's not my job to tell you you're going to get hurt, but there needs to be a rethinking or a reshifting about how somebody works out when they're older. One, so they don't hurt themselves.
Right.
And two, because if your goal is to maintain a 19-inch bicep, you're going to be in a lot of trouble.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, we have to think about our activity and, you know, appropriate changes with that as we age. No different than we think about our clothes, right? Like you're not wearing a mini skirt necessarily, because that's probably not going to look the most flattering. So, you know, there's an approach and technique to that. I find that a lot of people feel intimidated by going to the gym as they age. And, you know, so we need to have alternatives for that. Whether it is, you know, doing something at home or in a group or in a, you know, directed for, you know, environment that people feel better about. And also celebrating senior people within those gyms, you know, like talking about Europe, you know, you sit down to dinner and you watch in Europe, families interact, the grandparents are revered. And, you know, it's a different approach. And so one of the most important tools that we have for our health is, you know, taking care of ourselves and working out. But then the gyms are not looking at that as a favorable place for people who are older. So, you know, I think that that would be an amazing shift that we could see. And that's not going to happen necessarily overnight. But I think for individuals, owning it and, you know, sort of celebrating that, that's the real flex.
Well, that's a cultural mindset. You know, I've spoken to some of the other people about it too. Like it goes back to the fact that, you know, if you got a rocking butt when you're 26, you want to lead with that, go right ahead. If when you're 56, your butt's your best feature, you got trouble. The thing is, you know, I think that's something that even your concierge service can't fix, which is that we have to look at aging in a different way and understand where the power and the beauty, the sensuality and the sexuality is of people who are older. And it's not necessarily, you know, in gym statistics, but it's also in experience, it's in knowledge, it's in confidence.
Sure. But also when it comes to training, you are correct in terms of people getting into trouble. You know, use some resources is definitely the advice that I would suggest, because you know, you are going to get into trouble if you just try to wing it here, right? And a setback of an injury, you know, could take you out of the game for a year.
Especially when you're older. It's going to take you a lot longer to heal.
So the whole concept is you're going to do something that's positive, but you're doing it haphazardly. That really just doesn't make sense. I always explain to my clients, you know, you probably don't file your own taxes, right? You may have an accountant who helps you, right? But if you do file your own taxes, you're probably going to, you know, some sort of digital source to help you through that, you know, like, what are these companies that, you know, you do it online? Same idea. You're not going to go to the gym and work out on your own. Ideally, if you can have a trainer, that's going to be the best way to protect yourself and get the best results out of that. Somebody who's competent and really is motivated to give you the right information. But if you can't afford that, then there's online resources, which are phenomenal, that you could be, you know, sort of tapping into and then, you know, doing the course at the gym with somebody digitally. So I think that that's really important, because so many people just decide that they're going to go work out. My father the other day, who's 82, says, "Oh, I'm joining a gym." And I was like, "That's a terrible idea. You haven't worked out in 15 years. You know, you're diabetic. You have really significant risk of getting a, you know, injury to a toe. Like, this is not smart." So I convinced him to, you know, get physical therapy and have them be the trainer. And, you know, he couldn't be happier. And now he's like motivated and doing, you know, really well with that. But you just have to be careful about what that approach looks like.
Well, you should also when you're older, look, you're going to work twice as hard for half the results. That's just the way it works. But like, I know, like, I work out, I have a gym here in my home, and so I don't have a trainer here, but I use exactly what you're talking about. I use an online service where you put in your statistics and you put in your age, and it came up with a workout plan. Some of it's with Pilates, some of it's with TRX, some of it's against your own body weight. But the idea is not to try to, you know, turn back the clock there again and try to do the same things I did when I was 35 or 40, because yes, it's very attractive to say, I can, you know, curl 70 pounds, but you know what? You're not winning here. You're actually just going to get hurt. So the next, next one, sleep.
Mm.
Okay. As somebody who actually is not a good sleeper, I know the answer here. How essential is sleep and how much is enough?
Right. So, you know, you think about like the three pillars we talked about, right? But there's really been not a lot of focus on sleep until recently.
Right.
So this is what excites me. It's like, even that is a sign of things shifting, that sleep has now become such a focus. But if we are not focusing on sleep, we are basically minimizing one third of our real pillar of health. And so it's an unstable situation. And so I look at sleep as something that we have to work on. It doesn't come overnight, so to speak. You have to, you know, have tools in order to understand it. You got to be patient. And most people are really not serious about it. Everybody says, oh, my sleep's terrible. What can I do? And then I go through a whole list of recommendations and suggestions. And I say, well, which one makes sense to you? And they're like, oh, I don't know. I'm going to think about it. Right.
Can you give me some of those suggestions? I'm curious.
Sure. Like, having a routine. Our sleep is really about circadian rhythms. And so when we interrupt our routine, even by a couple of hours, we have a significant impact on the ability to sleep. So that's one simple fix. Devices, all of these things that we're tapped into and we're checking all the time are making your body have a positive reinforcement to wake up. So if when we check our phone, right when we wake up, you're getting dopamine, your body is saying, oh, get up, get up, get up. I want that dopamine. So disconnecting that, turning off the devices before we go to bed, a couple of hours before, these are real things that are difficult for people to do.
These days, especially, yes.
And it can be really helpful. Making sure your room is cold. We really have a connection between the temperature of our room and sleep. And most people, you know, don't want to make those choices. Some of my other sleep hacks, I think some of the other things that you can, you know, really focus on, supplements that can be helpful. So, you know, magnesium is really great at helping sleep.
It is.
It's a smooth muscle relaxer, but it also has a profound effect on just helping the brain, get into, you know, sort of prepared state for sleep. Sometimes melatonin, you know, which can be useful. And then not relying on alcohol, because there is a real negative interaction between sleep and alcohol.
I find it works against me. Yeah.
And most people don't think about that. They think, oh, I'm going to have a drink and I'm going to sleep better. Prescribed sleep medications and things like benzodiazepines. So that's what we call fake sleep. It knocks you out, but your body doesn't actually have restorative sleep. So I really enforce or try to get people to use wearable devices to study sleep. Because if you're not studying it, you don't know what you need, right? So if we, I'm a medical advisor to Oura, which is the ring that helps you understand your sleep. And so having data allows you to kind of understand like where you're at, like how many hours am I averaging, how much deep sleep, how much REM sleep, understanding ideal times to go to bed. So once we start to collect data, then we can understand predictability, like your ideal bedtime is at this hour. Also, we can see other factors like how restored we are, what our resting heart rate is, the stress levels in our body based on duration of sleep. And that gives us a better idea of like how much you need. So not everybody needs 8 hours. Some people can do really well on 6, but if we don't have that data point, then we really don't have a lot of ability to understand that. Like the gym, if you say, oh, I'm going to go work out and you can't measure your results, you're only like looking in the mirror, you know, there's a real disconnect between what's working and what's not. So having all of that information is really what I focus on with helping people improve.
Okay, two more categories that are not pillars. Okay, one, plastic surgery.
Love it.
Why?
So I just, you know, I think that there's a big shift in terms of it being not taboo. You know, anything that we could do to help us feel better, whether it's, you know, how we look, how we dress, you know, I think that that's all part of positive aging. And so, you know, if we have the opportunity and the ability to, you know, use plastic surgery to be part of that, then why not? You know, we look at ourselves in the mirror all the time. And if there's something that we see and that gives us a negative thought, if we can eliminate those negative thoughts, we have a profound effect in our wellness. So, you know, for those reasons, I think that it can be quite powerful. I mean, I think we have to be careful. We've sort of lost the plot on that as well, for some degree. So, you know, there's good, and then there's like overdone. And I always talk about this with my practice, like, you don't want to go to plastic surgery and like somebody say, oh, wow, they just, you know, had a facelift and they look scared. Same thing with what I do. You don't want to be overdone with, you know, replacing hormones and, you know, looking unhealthy or being unhealthy about that approach. But there is a healthy approach to be using, you know, these modalities, just the same as like getting a good haircut or, you know, splurging on, you know, an outfit that you like. I think that there's a lot of positive benefit for those reasons.
Yeah, it's about looking fresh, not trying to look like you're 30.
Right.
And the last one, attitude.
You know, I think it has to change from within. And so there has to be a conscious decision to have that attitude change. You know, because the alternative sucks, right? Either we age or we're not with us to even have this conversation. And so there has to be a thought process like, I'm going to, you know, make an effort and I'm going to work on that just the same. And, you know, I think that attitude and outlook and the energy that we put out there has a huge effect on everything, whether it's manifesting, you know, something that you want to have happen or, you know, having good health. I think that that all ties into it. So, you know, having a positive attitude about aging is, you know, something that I can't prescribe, but definitely try to emphasize in, you know, my own process and, you know, sort of what I do, and then conveying that and passing that along to my clients.
I mean, I think it's just about, basically it's about looking forward as opposed to always looking back.
Yeah. You know, it goes back to that birthday thing. You know, you got a birthday coming up. Well, let's get you in the best possible place that you could be for that birthday. So you feel great about that rather than, oh, okay, today I'm going to start making some changes. And, you know, the subconscious, our brain, how it works and, you know, what we think about is a big part of our overall health and wellness.
What are the first three things you do every morning?
So I have two dogs. So I walk the dogs every morning. And I think that that's a great way.
Great looking dogs, by the way. Okay.
Thank you. I think that, you know, dogs to me are like a really important part of like, you know, being healthy and happy and, you know, sort of enjoyment of life.
Why is that? Why is that before you go further?
Because they give unconditional love. They add structure and routine. You know, I think that it makes us sort of connect, with our communities because we're out and about with dogs. Like, I just think that there's a lot of, and also the health benefits of walking, you know, even on the worst days, you got to go out and walk the dogs. So that's always my first thing. I have coffee every morning as a religious, you know, sort of process, because I enjoy coffee. I think that there's good benefits of caffeine. And I think that it's important to kind of wake up and have that routine and not just be rushing.
You do your own or go to Starbucks?
I make my own.
On what kind of machine? Just curious.
Nespresso, the Vertu, the big pods.
Okay. Yeah.
I check my Aura score. So going back to my data and my sleep. So that's what I do every morning. I focus on protein. I don't skip breakfast. So this is number four, in case you're counting.
Yes, I am.
Because you know, a lot of people, you know, don't eat breakfast. And again, the idea of having enough protein in our diet is so fundamental to be able to maintain our lean muscle. And, you know, I think that having protein as part of breakfast, it's a process and it's work. You know, like, it's not so easy to be able to do. Most things are carbohydrate, you know, sort of driven for breakfast. So that's one of my daily steps. And then the fifth one was I work. So, you know, I think that as we age, if we don't have our brain thinking and being productive, you know, we have a decline of cognitive function. And so, you know, I work almost every day, whether it's just a little bit or it's a dedicated day going into the office. But I think that having something that keeps you, you know, motivated, have obligation, keeps that critical function of our brain is really important for me.
I think I know the answer to the next question, but I'll ask it anyway. Are you a happy grown-up?
I think so. I mean, yeah, that was like, I was thinking about that as I was preparing for this. Like, I guess I'm a grown-up. So
I think so.
And hopefully happy. But, you know, like everybody else, I mean, there's struggles in terms of like, you know, figuring out what is really making you happy. You know what I mean? Is it my apartment, you know, that I'm working on doing some renovations? Is that what's making me happy? Is it my relationships with people? You know, am I working enough on them? Is it, you know, not being stressed? Like, I think that it's a good question to be thinking about. And I think that you're doing something really smart here by sort of tuning into that, because it's not always a given.
No, it sure isn't. Thank you so much. This is a cascade of information, good information that I know I'm excited about it. So I hope everybody who's listening agrees with me as well. Thank you for joining us this week. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Sal. This is super fun.
And thank you all so much for listening. The Happy Grown Up newsletters are published every Tuesday on Substack, and our podcasts follow on Thursday, when we will be speaking with yet another enlightened, emboldened New Ager. And if you're enjoying our letters, algorithms, and captivating guests, please tell your friends to subscribe at thehappygrownup.com so our community can grow. Until next week, I urge you to remember that age is more than just a number. It's another opportunity to experience the chance of a lifetime. I'm Hal Rubinstein for The Happy Grownup.